month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualitypluskonsulting.com.
Support comes from the App Factory at UW Parkside. Is your business or nonprofit in need of a mobile app? Student interns at the App Factory make state-of-the-art and user-friendly apps for phones and other mobile devices. Web applications, too. For more information, visit appfactory.uwp.edu.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the annual Aging Well Conference will take place Friday, June 5th at UW Parkside. The conference is full of good information for those in a caregiving role or those who work with the elderly. Visit uwp.edu/ce.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by John Nicholson, a retired Racine Unified Administrator, Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the Teacher Education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconser, an Associate Professor of Education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current Special Education Support Volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, and Chuck Wolbers, a transition and work experience teacher in the Special Education Department at Tremper High School, also in Kenosha. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, welcome to Education Matters. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert. This week, I'm trying a little experiment. In April, I attended the American Educational Research Association annual meeting in Chicago, and I brought along a digital recorder. The American Educational Research Association, or AERA, was founded in 1916 and has over 25,000 members that are faculty, researchers, graduate students, and other professionals working in education research. They work in places like universities and other academic institutions, research institutes, federal and state agencies, school systems, testing companies, and nonprofit organizations. At the AER annual meeting, which is held over a five-day period, there are more than 10,000 participants, both presenting and consuming research on schools. I interviewed colleagues attending AERA who work in educational research or at research universities to see what they were working on and what they think we'll be seeing in education in the near future. This group was not a random sample, since they are all people I know, but a good representation of current education research. It's a bit heavy on Chicago, both because we were meeting in Chicago, but also because I spent 10 years of my career there. Some of the subjects have interesting ties to Wisconsin as well. I asked all of the subjects the same four questions. Tell us your name and affiliation. Tell us what you're currently working on. Give us your elevator pitch. What trends or developments do you see in education in the coming years that listeners should watch for? And finally, what's the most accurate source for lay people to stay informed about education research? What should they be reading? A list of their names, affiliations, and the resources they suggested will be made available through the Education Matters Facebook page, or listeners are welcome to email me at ksconzert@carthage.edu, and I will send you a list.
My name is Anne Marie Ryan. I am an associate professor at Loyola University Chicago. I am the program chair for teaching and learning, which encompasses all of our initial teacher preparation programs, advanced certification programs, and advanced degrees in curriculum and instruction. Let's see, I'm both a historian of education and I do research on initial teacher preparation as well as research around the teaching of history. Currently, I'm working with my colleagues looking at our initial teacher prep program that we just redesigned to be field-based. So here at AERA, I am going to be doing a presentation that looks at the initial implementation of that field-based program and our initial findings on how that's impacting our undergraduate population as well as the impact that it's having on our partner schools. Well, I think we've been seeing some huge trends in kind of outsourcing teacher education to entities out of the university setting and into alternative education programs by not-for-profits and even for-profit kinds of entities. I believe that some of that will increase. I do think, though, that we're seeing some responses by universities like our own. And I think that's an interesting trend to watch, to see how universities are trying to kind of reclaim that particular area. And I think that's something to be watching for at your local universities as well as nationally. So I would definitely keep an eye on that. I think Loyola University, where I am, is one of those places. I think it's important to look at your local and not just those big national kind of names that everybody seems to want to go to. Mm-hmm. Certainly there's some interesting things happening at places like Stanford and University of Michigan, and I'm sure Madison is probably doing something interesting. But I would ask people to really reach out to your local teacher education programs and see what they're up to, and see if there's ways that you can support them, see if there's interesting partnerships going on that might be of interest to your listeners and perhaps K-12 schools in the area, and ways that they can support it.
Okay.
I think there are some ways to keep up with this. I think there's places like ASCD, Association of Supervision and Curriculum Development, that tries to do some work on this. I think EdWeek is actually a pretty good source to get some of the highlights of these kinds of things. In Chicago, we have Catalyst, which tries to keep up with things that are going on, all things Chicago, if you're interested in the Northern Illinois kind of market. I would think up in the Milwaukee area, Rethinking Schools is probably worth taking a look at. So those are some things off the top of my head that might be interesting to take a look at. And then AACTE, which is the Association of Colleges of Teacher Education. I would take a look at what they're doing and what they're up to. They're very interested in the policy matters for teacher educators, and I think their particular site is actually pretty user-friendly if you're interested in the policy matters.
I'm Kenneth Wong. I teach at Brown University. I'm a professor at Brown University's Education Department. One of the research projects that I'm working on right now has to do with early childhood education. And so where I am right now is the city of Providence in Rhode Island. And the city has received a grant to engage parents, particularly in low-income neighborhoods, to communicate more often and frequently with their infants and toddlers. And so my research right now is to help the city to track and study the quality of that interaction between parents and young children. And the idea is that we are going to analyze and provide them with coaching, support, and curriculum so that when the child grows older, they would be more kindergarten ready. So I'm putting together a longitudinal data tracking system so that we could compare the students in this program with the students who are not in this program in the next 4 or 5 years. And the idea is that by the time they are kindergarten ready, they will be able to have the literacy skills and the comprehension skills so that they would function more effectively in the public schools. I think related to my project, I think there will be a big push for early childhood education, because a lot of research suggests that investing in early childhood education actually pays off. A lot of economists as well as policy analysts agree that this is a good way for state and federal government to get involved in. So I think a big trend will be stronger state investment and stronger federal investment in early childhood education. The second trend that I'm seeing is a variety of ways to think about supporting teachers. So up to this point, there has been a lot of debate in terms of just using the test scores to measure teacher quality and hold the teacher accountable for their school performance. But I think going forward, there will be a broader set of indicators in terms of teacher support policy. So I think that would be the kind of the second big trend that I'm seeing, is to provide more professional development, induction program, maybe changes in higher education institution, the way that we train teachers, and to make it more field-based on day one so that they would have more time to practice their tools and their knowledge, and also to mentor them with experienced teachers. So I see all of these activities going to be a big cluster of what I call new teacher education development policy. I think Education Week is a good source. It's a very reliable, accurate focus. It's a news source, but it is quite comprehensive. It focuses on a lot of emerging issues, and it also has sections on the latest research. There might be a paragraph or two on some of the reports, but also some feature analysis on some of the big issues. For example, right now there are a lot of coverage on the Common Core, a lot of coverage on blended learning. The most recent one is actually on the research and practice related to blended learning. So I think there will be a lot of very good resources, and it's also online. So if some of your listeners are interested in a particular topic, they can actually search the online version as well. So that's one. The other ones, I think, is also interesting. There are a lot more media that is a lot of think tanks are now putting a lot of their research online. And so you can look at a lot of major kind of well-respected think tanks, from the Brookings Institution to the Stanford University's Education Policy Center. University of Washington has a center on reinventing public education, RAND Corporation. So people can actually check out all these websites, and if they are interested in the technical studies, they can actually go deeper in particular areas.
Thank you. Well, okay. Thanks so much for your insights.
Hi, I'm Terry Piggott. I'm the interim dean at Loyola University of Chicago at the School of Education. And I have been at Loyola for 16 years, formerly as a professor of research methodology. One of the things I'm working on right now has to do with the relationship between the amount of resources a school has and their students' academic achievement. There's a long history of this kind of research. I'm looking at, say, per pupil expenditures and the academic achievement of students. And that research has been going on since the, say, mid-90s. And it's still relevant, and it's coming up again in many contexts. For example, there have been some economic studies showing that in the 80s, when school districts had infused a lot of money into schools and tried to redo the school finance, how schools are financed, we're seeing later positive economic impacts, especially for students who went to low-resource schools. So we're looking at, again, at this issue to look at what is that relationship between the amount of school resources a school has and the achievement of their students.
Okay.
I think one of the things I'm concerned about is the great stress on accountability, both at the level of teachers. What teachers have to go through in order to maintain their jobs, and this issue of using testing as the way to decide if a teacher is effective or not. And that is also spilling over into the teacher preparation programs. So schools and universities are also concerned with having to have testing be a part of how we decide if a teacher is ready to go out into the schools. So I feel like this very strong accountability movement is something we really have to look at in terms of how we're judging the effectiveness of not only our teachers in schools, but our teachers people who want to become teachers in schools. Well, I do have one book that I think might be interesting to your listeners, and that is called Improbable Scholars by David Kerp. And I think for most of some of your listeners are teachers, are not going to be surprised by the punchline of this book. and that is effective schools, especially in high needs areas. In order to be effective, they just have to do really hard work, and they have to get together with each other, talk collaboratively, not only across grade levels as teachers, but across schools, elementary schools to high schools and so forth. This is a story mostly about a high needs community in New Jersey and how they actually became a highly effective school district. So I highly recommend that book.
Okay, thank you very much.
I am Joanne Marshall, and I am at Iowa State University as an associate professor and as the program coordinator for educational administration. Personal details. I used to teach in Zion, Illinois, so I lived in Kenosha for 3 years while I did that, ran back and forth. I like to look at what people are doing privately and how that turns into public schools. The two things I've been working on most recently are there's a teacher-based philanthropy in one of the neighboring schools, which is really cool, and that a bunch of teachers got together to try to meet the physical needs of the kids in their district. And so they founded a nonprofit foundation, and they've been doing that for 10 years. So I think it's a really interesting example of teacher leadership that's also raising finances. They've raised about $500,000 over the last 10 years just through donations and such, and given it all away in gift cards and food and such. So I think they're pretty amazing. Another thing I've been keeping working on is work-life balance, which is just something that I fell into as a professional and as a mom. So keep working on how to do that better and how educators in particular manage. Well, you know, Illinois and Wisconsin are interesting policy contexts. I'm trying to think what they are going to be looking for things in terms of school funding probably that I can't talk about because I know the Iowa context as much. But I think the privatization of schools is something to keep an eye out for as people want more choice and more charters and want to think about taking tax dollars elsewhere. I don't know how to answer that or how to fix the equitable school funding problem that continues everywhere, but that would be what I'd be most concerned about. Education Week is lovely. They have a really nice website, too, that you can go to and get some current information about. New York Times education section isn't bad. The Association for Supervision and Curriculum Development, yes. ASCD, has a newsletter, and that comes in my email box once a week, and I really like looking at it because it sort of summarizes the news as well as the trends that are going on.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome very much.
My name is Stacy Rutledge, and I am an associate professor at the Florida State University in Tallahassee, Florida. The elevator pitch is, so I've been working for 5 years on a federal grant that is looking at how to scale up effective practices in urban high schools. So the project is organized as followed. It's the first year we went into 4 schools in Broward County, Florida, which is the 6th largest district in the country. And we took 2 high-performing schools and 2 low-performing schools and did 3 weeks of interviews, observations in the schools to try to understand what the effective schools were doing and what the not-so-effective schools were doing and what made them different from each other. And what we found that made the effective schools different was that they personalized the learning experience for the kids in these high schools. So what they were doing was that they were the guidance counselors, the assistant principals, the teachers were all working very hard to interact with kids in classrooms, make sure that they were individualizing instruction, making the learning meaningful for kids. They were talking about the kids with each other. They were very intentionally, strategically thinking about how can we make this school experience for the kids meaningful and how can we help them feel a sense of belonging. So what we've been doing since that first year, which was 5 years ago, we've been trying to now implement those ideas in 3 other schools in Broward. So take the effective practices and scale them up in other schools. And so this involved working on a team with district people, school people together to take the basic idea and transfer those practices to these other schools. And so right now we're seeing whether this idea of reform nested in districts in effective practices, whether that works, and whether we can then transfer these ideas then to even more schools. Well, I think all of us need to be keeping an eye on accountability policy and standards and assessments and making sure that we are comfortable with those policies. There's going to be a new version of the education, the Elementary and Secondary
Education Act.
And so we're going to be interested in seeing what that means. Probably there'll be a decrease in testing, increased state involvement in those kind of decisions, so less federal presence. That's at least what I think is going to happen. So as people who advocate in the public schools, we have to decide, do we like this direction or do we not like this direction? I have another line of work that looks at the role of data in schools and in districts, and that research says that we really can't not look at data without understanding the technology piece. So I think we, as people in education who are parents and teachers, et cetera, we need to make sure that we're understanding that connection between data and technology and whether we, again, we're comfortable with the direction that that's going in. Well, the Washington Post has an excellent blog, so you can go to that. Your state, I imagine, has some kind of resource. Yeah. So I know in Florida, we have the Tampa Bay Times has one. So those two sources, you can go sign up for them and then regularly check them. EdWeek, I'm sure people have mentioned that.
Yes, it's been mentioned.
Yes. So that's you know, the paper of record for education. The New York Times newspapers have that you can often specifically identify the education articles. Mm-hmm. And then blogs. So, you know, Diane Ravitch has a blog. Bruce Baker, who's an economist, he has a blog. So, you know, I think it's, you know, those are the ones in my field. Mm-hmm. But, you know, all of us have things that we're interested in, like teacher education, like you.
Right.
So you just kind of have to be attuned to what you're interested in, explore the web, and there'll be people there. And you can participate or not participate.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Sure. My name is John Easton. I work at the Spencer Foundation here in Chicago. The Spencer Foundation is an unusual foundation. It's the only one like it in this country that all of its grants are made to education research. So it's really a wonderful organization for people who are trying to tackle important questions in education.
And just prior to this, you were?
I just left Washington, D.C., where I was the director of the Institute of Education Sciences, which is the nation's home for education research, evaluation, assessment, and statistics. Prior to that, I lived and worked in Chicago for many, many years, decades even, and worked with the Consortium on Chicago School Research. Well, we've just launched a wonderful new research grant program that we call Research Practice Partnerships. And this idea is built on our belief that when researchers are working more collaboratively with practitioners, that they're going to tackle the real problems of real people and help those people who are struggling on the ground really solve their problems. So we're not, we'll always need basic, what we might call ivory tower research, but we're really trying to encourage more researchers to become actively involved with real problems of real people in real schools. Oh, well, I think everybody knows that this country right now is struggling with questions about assessing student learning. What kind of tests to give. There's been a lot of dissatisfaction over the last few decades about the poor quality of the assessments that students have taken, that they're very shallow, they require very basic kinds of skills. And so there's been an attempt to improve the quality of this, to require much more in-depth thinking, more problem solving on the basis of for students. And, you know, we're seeing some sort of kickback now with some of these newer assessments that haven't been proven yet. So I think we're going to have a little bit of a bumpy road here as we transition. I don't think that there are many people who disagree that we need higher quality assessments, but getting there is going to take some trial and error, I'm afraid. Well, one place I would encourage people to go is to the National Center for Education Statistics, which is a reputable, highly reputable, objective, nonpartisan source of information about all kinds of things in education across the country. And that organization also administers what's called the National Assessment of Educational Progress, which is widely considered a high-quality assessment. So I urge people to look for that. It's called NAEP, or the Nation's Report Card, the National Assessment for Educational Progress. It is a place to look at to get a better understanding of what a really good test looks like.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
No.
Thanks a lot.
My name is Stuart Lupescu. I'm the chief psychometrician at the Consortium on Chicago School Research. Been there for about 23 years. Well, it's like an area of statistics that deals with measurements, and I generally analyze test and questionnaire data to make measures. A lot of survey work. I work with the regular consortium surveys, non-cognitive skills surveys, and early childhood surveys.
Yes.
We're working on this wonderful project that tries to quantify the non-cognitive skills of students. These are non-cognitive, cognitive refers to academic skills, you know, like reading and math and things like that. These are non-cognitive skills that we feel have a very strong importance for students' academic success, and they include things like grit, that is the students' tendency to not give up in the face of failure, to try many times. There are a lot of other things like work organization and feelings of belonging, a lot of things like that. It's really very interesting subject, and we think it has a lot of potential for future research. Well, I think that as I just mentioned, the non-cog studies.
Yeah.
But I think that non-cog is very, very important. You know that you know, academic skills might get you into college, and you know, you might do okay in the first year. But I think that the non-cognitive skills are really very important for persisting through college, graduating, getting a good job, and succeeding in life in general. Well, all the consortium reports are geared towards non-academics. They're meant to be read by policy people and stakeholders, just regular people in the community. We keep all the technical jargon out of them, so we try to make them as accessible as possible. And also, I like the Chicago Public Radio education reporter, Linda Lutton.
Yes.
She does an excellent job. She's interviewed me a few times. But I really like her work. Yeah, I once did an interpreting gig while I was a graduate student at the University of Chicago. I did an interpreting gig at Snap-on Tools.
Interpreting?
Interpreting Japanese and English. There was the Japanese subsidiary, I guess, from Snap-on was coming to Kenosha for negotiating, and I was the interpreter.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
This is Education Matters, and you are listening to brief interviews conducted with attendees at the American Educational Research Association annual meeting held in Chicago this past April. A list of resources named by the researchers will be available on the Education Matters Facebook page or by emailing me, Karen Sconzert, at kskonzert@carthage.edu.
I'm Vicki Trinder, and I run the elementary ed programs at UIC, the University of Illinois at Chicago. And there's a graduate level one and an undergraduate level one involved in that labor. And what was the second part of that?
Oh, do you have any connection to Wisconsin?
My connection to Wisconsin is mostly as a pass-through state, although because I lived in Minnesota for several years and then was teaching and advocating in the immigrant neighborhoods in Chicago. So it's a hard elevator pitch for me because it feels comprehensive because it includes all of those domains.
Mm-hmm.
But we have an emerging framework for teacher education around principles of decolonizing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a decolonizing framework for teacher education that is trying to reconstruct the programming, the curriculum for teacher education via principles of understanding that schools are a tool of settler colonialism and that they still enact imperialist values day in, day out. So my background is a social studies person,
mm-hmm.
that I share with you. has allowed me to embed that content area in the foundations of my programs and then also throughout the rest of the coursework all the way through student teaching. So we're working on some empirical studies connected to what the impact of that has been for students and then also K-12 students, but then also for our teacher candidates in terms of resilience and mm-hmm. teacher identity. Actually, you know, it's the last day of the Educational Research Conference, so it's an odd time to say this, but I feel fairly hopeful about the next wave because I think some of the corporate reform approaches are running their course. I think we're seeing in evidence and empirical research as well as discourse from the ground that they're not serving the needs of people in the way that had been presented as possible through those mechanisms. So I feel that it won't be long before they're passing on and we can do much more grassroots work with schools and communities and districts, pulling in collaborations with research teams that aren't almost nullified by district powerhouses like we see here in Chicago. Any collaborations that take off with teachers and students almost require a circumventing of the district at this point because it's so fraught. We have people under, they're not under indictment yet, but they've been deposed in the last couple of weeks. And so maybe even that is a sign of hope, but we'll wait to see on that one.
Right.
I think at this point, and maybe I should have said this earlier with the connection to Wisconsin because now it's stirring my memory, but Milwaukee actually I think is the hub of many really progressive education events. There's Rethinking Schools that puts out a publication that's really accessible and actually co-produced by education scholars as well as parents, students, mm-hmm. And has been based in southern Wisconsin for a long time. Schools that helped us in the founding of a progressive school in the immigrant neighborhood in Chicago, Little Village, like El Puente, are in Milwaukee, and I think those are places where research is being enacted
mm-hmm.
And might even be better access. So just to, there were other schools, too. Milwaukee at one point had several Afrocentric schools with really vibrant curricula, and I think there are one or two of them left.
Mm-hmm.
I would almost say that that's a better bet right now. A lot of the research discourse seems to be around implications of those places, and I think there's as much information to be gained from going to them than
mm-hmm.
oneself. And they're much more hopeful in person than they are online.
Okay, thank you very much.
My name is Eric Cambron, and I am a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in a department called Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis, and I'm also the current chair of that department. My elevator pitch, well, I'm currently working on many things, but one of the things that I'm most excited about is a new study that I'm working on that's in its first year. Myself and a number of colleagues are looking at a program called the Authentic Intellectual Work Initiative. It's a high school program in Iowa that attempts to help teachers and students do more intellectually demanding work. It is, it's a fairly large study. We're going to eventually be working in about 50 schools, and we are looking at all sorts of different kinds of evidence of what teachers and students are doing in the classroom, including looking at student work and teacher assignments. We're going to score those, and we're also going to survey students and look at their performance, their standardized achievement performance, and try to make connections between all those things. I think, you know, some of the hot issues out there that are getting a lot of attention are things like Common Core, state standards, and new assessments for students that are aligned with Common Core, state standards, and the evaluation of teachers and principals. So I think, as far as trends go, I would imagine that there's going to be a lot of attention paid to those in the coming years.
Okay.
There's actually a couple of really good blogs out there that are, it's hard to know if they're the most accurate sources, but I think they're informative and many of them are written by knowledgeable folks. One is the Shanker blog. It's published by the Albert Shanker Institute. The other is Diane Ravitch's blog. And I think some of the education reporting that I've seen on the Huffington Post actually has been pretty good.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I am Elaine Allensworth. I'm the Lewis Sebring Director of the University of Chicago Consortium on School Research. All the work we do here at the Consortium on Chicago School Research is aimed at kind of tracking progress in the Chicago public schools and also really trying to dig into really difficult problems that educators are struggling with to tell them what actually matters, find high leverage points, help them develop new strategies for improving student outcomes. So we have a lot of different bodies of work looking at different areas of school. One area is really helping the school district improve college graduation rates. In fact, the district has taken college graduation on as its goal, even though people may think that college is outside of the realm of the K-12 sector. So that's really exciting. And we're trying to put together data reports for all the schools that show what's happening to their ninth grade classes as they move through high school and then through college, so that schools can figure out where their students may be dropping off in terms of getting that four-year college degree. And then we're doing research at the same time to look at what it is that schools can do to really support students through those different stages. So that's really trying to support the district around their goals for improving students' educational attainment. Another area that we're working really closely with the district on is in reducing discipline disparities. We have had traditionally very high suspension rates in Chicago public schools and really large differences by race and by gender. And so we're really trying to dig into those issues, really try to understand what those disparities are, why they exist, and what's happening in schools as the district tries to reduce the use of out-of-school suspensions. And we have studies going on around teacher evaluation, looking at how schools are using the new teacher evaluation system, what's working, what's not working. We have studies on school leadership, looking at what it is that principals do that has the biggest impact on students and on teachers. And we have continued work on high school graduation. We have lots of different areas of work that are going on here, and I kind of dabble in all of it. Yeah, well, I think people are, there's a backlash currently against standardized testing. I think for a while, it was all the rage to have more and more accountability policies put into place that were based on students' standardized scores and reading and math assessments. Places, like I can say in Chicago, but I know in a lot of places, a lot of districts were giving more and more standardized tests, different kinds of tests. There are tests at the local level, state level. And the people have really been feeling testing fatigue. So I think we see a backlash there. Schools and districts looking for alternative measures of student and school performance. Really getting, thinking about different ways of trying to encourage school improvement other than just accountability metrics or a small number of accountability metrics, I should say. But really thinking about what are the kinds of supports that you can give to schools, like data supports, so that schools can improve. So in Chicago, for example, we've seen really big improvements in high school graduation rates. And we've also seen improvements in college going. And part of that, it's not just because schools are held accountable for high school graduation and now also for some college outcomes, but it's because schools have been getting data supports that have allowed them to track indicators that are really important for reaching those later outcomes. So I think we're going to, increasingly see that people are going to be trying to use data in ways that are really useful for understanding problems better and monitoring for student performance, rather than just punishing for schools for not reaching certain standards. I think people are also more aware nowadays that student success is a lot more than just their measures on standardized tests. Standardized tests are really limited to a very small, a narrow range of outcomes. If you think about all the things that teachers are trying to do in the classroom and all the things that parents want from their schools, they want a lot more than just students perform well on, you know, tests in two subjects, right? And so, you know, with this backlash of testing, I think there's also a search to try to figure out, you know, how do we actually monitor how students are doing in lots of different kinds of areas, you know, different subject areas, but also areas like, you know, study habits and mindsets about learning, and how do we support teachers and schools to develop students, you know, to develop this broader range of skills and attitudes in kids, rather than just really narrowly focusing on reading and math scores. You know, Education Week, you know, Ed Week, I think is, you know, can point people to lots of good information. You know, we try to put out our research in reports and in briefs that are geared not just towards researchers, but towards educators and policymakers. And I think we succeed to more or less extent with different kinds of publications, but, you know, anyone can come to our website and see the work that we have in all kinds of different areas, as I was saying, you know, from teacher evaluation to high school graduation to non-cognitive skills. And, you know, we really do try to write them in a way that's accessible. And, you know, we try to put out shorter pieces, too.
My name is Julie Mead, and I'm a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis. Well, in short, right now, what I'm working on is looking at various forms of publicly funded school choice, particularly vouchers and tax credit programs, and the constitutionality and legality of those systems. Well, with regard to forms of privatization, and privatization in public education is, or of public education, is an issue right now because of the legislative pushes to expand ways in which public monies are used for private education. So in the state of Wisconsin, we had the first voucher program in the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program. And, of course, we've now expanded that to create a Racine Parental Choice Program and then a statewide Wisconsin Parental Choice Program. In addition to that, we, of course, have charter schools, which when those charter schools are authorized by school boards, are more like public. They are public schools and are very similar to what happens in many cases in a traditional public school. But we also have another kind of charter school that's chartered or created or authorized by entities that are not public school districts. And right now in the biennium budget bill being considered by the state legislature, there are two proposals, one which would expand the statewide voucher program, removing the limits on that program, and the second to create a new charter school oversight board, which would be able to designate various entities as independent charter authorizers, non-school board authorizers, and those new non-school board authorizers could authorize charter schools anywhere in the state without regard to whether the school board or the people who vote in that community think it's a good or bad idea. So those two proposals, both the expansion of the statewide voucher program and the expansion of independent charters, are particular concerns of mine right now. The National Education Policy Center has some documents like that. They tend to be, I mean, they still may be longer than people want to read because they tend to be around 10 pages long. The Wisconsin Center for Education Research posts short descriptions of each of their studies and the findings that are coming out of them. But the Education Week, which is a weekly newspaper that helps to keep folks updated on issues around education and education policy, both in the research world and kind of the policy world, what legislatures are doing and so forth, that might be a place that folks could find quick descriptions without the statistical tables.
Thank you for listening to our interviews with educational researchers attending the American Educational Research Association annual meeting in Chicago this past April. A list of resources named by the researchers will be available on the Education Matters Facebook page or by emailing me, Karen Sconzert, at ksconzert@carthage.edu. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio.